Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, what goes on behind closed doors, the goals, the Geisterspiel, as continental corona concerns reach fever pitch. We'll be having a special look at the state of play and at the midweek Champions League games with huge fixtures ahead for Liverpool, Spurs and PSG. All in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, continentally curious listener. Thanks for joining us. It's nice and cosy here in the studio today. We've got Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Hello to you, Alvaro. James Horncastle was here.
Hello there.
He's been tested twice now. Julien Laurens, have you had a test? Have you had a swab?
No, not yet, no.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Still untested at this level.
Right. Let's have the round of headlines. James.
Well, we finally got to see the Derby d'Italia, James, albeit behind closed doors. Wonderful goal from Paulo Dybala. Mm. One of the best goals of his career. We also saw Milan take some quite extraordinary action. They decided to terminate the contract of one Zvonimir Boban. Boom. After Zvonimir went rogue.
Right. Jules, in France, meanwhile.
We had AVB losing his shizzle as Marseille dropped 2 points against Amiens in the last few minutes. I love that expression, losing his shizzle.
Right.
PSG didn't play because their game became the first one to be postponed away at Strasbourg, which is a cluster for coronavirus. And Lyon missed out on their probably last opportunity to close down on the top three.
Rafa, you're enjoying the pairing there of PSG and cluster in the same sentence.
Well, it's a word that has come up before when it comes to PSG games. What was it, the third year anniversary this week, Jules?
Of the what?
Barcelona remontada.
How they held on to that first leg win against Barcelona. Oh,
I've got a list of the karma that PSG have had in the last few years since the Qatari took over, which is pretty impressive. I'll keep it for later.
Okay, Jules' list is coming up. Also from Germany, what's on the way?
Well, Germany, the biggest sporting story, I guess, was Borussia against Borussia, and Borussia won. Black and yellows. 2-1 win, a great goal from Thorgan Hazard, and they are now the closest and perhaps the only contenders to wrest the title of Bayern, who also won against Augsburg.
Okay. And Alvaro?
And in Spain, Barcelona regained the first spot in La Liga after losing El Clásico, which is something that sets a lot of doubts over Real Madrid and their capacity to stay in the first position, because they don't seem to be reliable, neither Barcelona. And as it stands, it wouldn't be surprising if none of them make more than 80 points this season, which is far worse than they've been doing over the last 15 years.
Wow. Okay. Also, you got an All-Basque Cup final, which I know you're going to be very excited to tell us all about. The other big story, though, as we say, is coronavirus, whose impact on organised sport is escalating day by day. Players from the Danish league have been quarantined. Members of Ajax's coaching staff in Holland have been also quarantined, including Christian Poulsen. France, you had your first game suspended, Jules, as you mentioned. All Ligue 1 games as well are going to be behind closed doors, they've just announced, until mid-April.
Yeah, the decision that was made late last night, was that every sporting competition or any gathering of more than 1,000 people can't happen. So if you've got less than 1,000 people at, you know, your party, for example, that can go ahead.
You got that.
That's good. That is good. Monaco, we'd be fine. No, even Monaco, we'd be behind closed door, which won't make much difference, to be fair to them. But yeah, so yeah, all Ligue 1 games and Ligue 2 as well, we'll be behind closed door next weekend. Rugby games have been postponed even in the Six Nations.
Okay, although PSG's game with BVB is, as it stands, going ahead behind closed doors, but the rugby's been postponed from the weekend.
So yes,
also in Paris.
Yeah.
Italy, who are for once ahead of the curve on things here, are actually suspending the season. The rest of the previous round's games did go ahead this weekend, but the new sports minister calling it an irresponsible decision. The federation then responding to him, all right, we'll make a decree about it if you want.
We had that bizarre set of circumstances on Sunday when the lunchtime kickoff between Parma and Spal was delayed by 90 minutes because you mentioned the government drafting a decree. They had issued one that day basically saying that certain regions in Italy would be quarantined, including Lombardy, which is where Milan, Inter, Brescia and Atalanta play. And all sporting events would be postponed. But Serie A would be allowed to go on. and Serie B would be allowed to go on behind closed doors. That decree did not go down particularly well with Damiano Tomasi, the head of the Players Association, who registered his dissent, saying that he feels it's an unnecessary risk even for players to be playing behind closed doors. And the Minister of Sport, seeing that, agreed with Tomasi and then went on TV and basically said, yes, I don't think we should be playing. But you raise a very salient point, James, in that in terms of the law as written and pushed through Parliament, Serie A was allowed to play those games behind closed doors. And it just felt that there was a lot of confusion created by the sporting minister in basically saying, yes, I'm all for what Tomasi says.
Right.
And until that was clarified in terms of, I think, legally, the league called the Players Association. They thrashed out what they were going to do, and Parmaspal ended up going ahead. But I think Tomasi, it's really interesting seeing the reaction, because over the last week, we haven't really heard from players about whether they wish to continue and keep playing. And after the statement he put out, players have come out either on social media or speaking to the rights holders after games of the weekend, like Mario Balotelli, saying, yeah, I don't believe we should be playing. Because we have seen teams in lower leagues, the third division, for example, like Pianese, where four players were diagnosed with COVID-19. We've seen Provocelli today, another third division side with an illustrious history, deciding that they are not going to be playing until April 3rd. So given this groundswell of opinion kind of endorsing, following what the rest of the country is doing and in postponing things until April 3rd.
Right. And what do you think about the prospects in the months to come? We have a question here from B. Colic, who says, what's going to happen with the Euros, in your opinion? Obviously, this is wild speculation, but as it stands, the way things are moving, there's a fair risk. And there's been talk of the Euros potentially even being postponed by 12 months.
Yeah, well, FIFA would love that, of course, if they had to move their illustrious club World Cup to another time, because UEFA muscle in with the Euros. I mean, in Germany, the ambition, the intention is very much to finish the season one way or the other, because they think that clubs cannot plan effectively for next season if the season doesn't finish in May. You don't know what division you're in. You don't know what kind of money you're making, what kind of competition you're in next year. So I think they will try, come what may, to at least play this out behind closed doors. There is a wide assumption now that next weekend will be behind closed doors in most places. Germany still is very regional when it comes to making these decisions. The local authority can make these decisions, which is why Leipzig Spurs is going ahead. In the area of Leipzig in Saxony, in that land, that federal state, there's only been 10 cases so far. And because the opposition come from the UK, which is not quite seen as a risk state just yet, the local authority basically said, yeah, we don't see a reason why we shouldn't play. But in North Rhine-Westphalia, which is the most populated region of Germany, which also has the most football clubs and the most cases, there is increasing political pressure to move everything behind closed doors, which would affect on Wednesday Gladbach-Köln, the rearranged derby in the Bundesliga. Possibly the Leverkusen game against Rangers on Thursday. And then, sadly, the big Ruhrpott derby between Dortmund and Schalke as well. So it looks like all these games would be Geisterspiele, as you said in the intro, ghost games.
Ghost games.
With not a lot of action as far as the crowd are concerned.
PSG, for example, are going to try, would love the game against Dortmund to be postponed. But it's just, I don't think it's practical. I don't think they'd be allowed. I don't think they would be that. They tried everything they could to avoid the behind closed door decision. So they had that big cleaning company coming and literally disinfect the whole Parc des Princes from top to bottom, every handle, everything. They wanted to ban people who live in those clutter areas to come from the game and just reimburse the tickets and you can't come in, just to try to convince local authorities to leave it as it is with fans. But that was clearly not enough, and I don't think they would be able to get the game postponed anyway. And I'm not sure it would make much of a difference if just postponing it for 1 week.
I think one of the problems that we've seen in Italy this weekend is that, okay, they've taken the decision to play games behind closed doors so crowds don't gather, but they still do gather around wherever the team is. So, for example, Inter were playing in Turin against Juventus. They got there the night before, stayed at a hotel, and then a crowd is gathered looking for essentially autographs and selfies and photos outside their hotel, which is a risk in itself. So football going ahead, even when those games are being played behind closed doors, has repercussions, which could, in theory, lead to the spread of the virus and this situation not getting any better, which I think from a responsibility point of view, I think that's one of the reasons why there is now this groundswell for them to just stop the championship altogether for the next 2 weeks.
Given the way that Italy is currently about a week ahead of the rest of Europe, it feels like, with measures, with the spread of this virus, I wonder how much that's going to start being an idea in other domestic and indeed European competitions, Alvaro.
Yeah, I was going to say that you can stop sporting activities from happening, and I believe that that is something that in Spain they have to start taking very seriously. From now on, La Liga and the Spanish FA, because they are not talking yet about playing behind closed doors, let alone stopping the competition, but also the local authorities and governments, they should be addressing what's happening with, for instance, the festivities like Las Fallas, which happen in Valencia. It's, 1 million people normally go there and spend a couple of weeks, and what they do in Las Fallas, basically they burn some dolls and resembling politicians and resembling sportsmen, and plenty of people from Italy, from France, from different parts of Spain go to Las Fallas in Valencia, and that hasn't been suspended yet. Yeah. And Las Fallas start in a week time, I believe. Mm. So what is the point of stopping every sporting activity if the rest of the festivities and activities don't go in hand with that?
Very true. All right, well, Champions League is going ahead this week, so let's start talking about some of those matches. We'll begin with the Champions League game in Paris, because this could be our last chance all season.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
PSG taking on Dortmund on Wednesday. Clung behind closed doors. 2-1 from the first leg. That extraordinary brace from Erling Haaland. But equally, you did get your away goal, though. So how confident are PSG of turning it around, Jules?
They seem very confident. That was before we learned about the game being played behind closed doors. But I don't know where they find that confidence. I think it's still a team that is not very good collectively, that you're not sure if you can really rely on your, like, two leaders and two superstars in Mbappe and Neymar.
So Neymar's back fit now?
He's back fit. I think, I don't know if it's a good thing not to have played at the weekend. You saw Dortmund having a very intense game and a very tiring game against Gladbach. And I don't know if not playing was a good thing for PSG or not. Yeah, okay, they won't get tired. But I think a lot of their players, especially the ones who came back from little injuries or something that I could have done with a bit of game time, including Neymar. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he didn't play might be a good thing or not, I don't know. But I just don't think they are right now collectively good enough to turn this round. I think they will concede a goal. So that means they will have to score at least two to get to extra time and more than that. I just think it's a bit of an imbalanced team. There's key players like Verratti missing him through suspension. So I don't think he's looking very good. But On their side, they believe they can do it.
Rafa?
But Dortmund are a lot more confident than they were when the draw was made. They were really not happy. They felt that against PSG, the way that they themselves are defending, that this was always only going to go one way. Then I think they surprised themselves to a certain extent. Emre Can has made a huge difference to the team in terms of stability and presence. And is also, I think, provided a platform for the players up front to play with a bit more belief and freedom, knowing that they don't necessarily have to score four goals every time, because one or two might be enough, that the fans does hold. It's still, I think, a 50-50 game. The fact that there are no fans is clearly to Dortmund's advantage. They're not upset about that at all. And you have to say that at the moment, with the kind of form that Sancho is in and Haaland is in, and even Thorgan Hazard showing signs of coming back to his best, it's tough not to see them score at least one goal, at which point, of course, PSG have to score three if they want to go through, or two to extra time. So I think Dortmund have a really, really good chance here. And the way that they've been sort of managing games and getting results, even in difficult places, and Saturday was a good example of that, would make me semi-optimistic that they could do it.
PSG's lost six knockout games in this competition. How many have they won? One of them.
I mean, if you look at the car, I mean, it's pretty incredible. If you look, if you go back to 2013, they drew 2-2 with Barcelona at the Parc des Princes in the first leg of the quarterfinals. Then they go away to Barcelona. Messi's on the bench because he picked up an injury. PSG scored, Pastore scored that goal with Ibra assist. And then you've got this iconic image of Messi on the bench pulling his socks up. You know he's going to come on. And then he went pear-shaped from there. He came on. David Villa scored. He made 1-1. We out on the away goals. The year after that, 2014, quarterfinals against Chelsea. It's a great 3-1 win at home. Second leg at Stamford Bridge. They drop deeper and deeper and deeper. 87th minute. Then Baba, of all people, scored with his shin. Right? The year after that is the David Luiz injury, and he goes and get horse blood.
Right.
You know?
Horse blood.
Horse blood.
My goodness.
Treatment.
Yeah, equine plasma.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Indeed. I call it horse blood because then he was...
Isn't it the placenta?
Yeah. Then he was humiliated by Suarez and Barca destroyed us pretty much. After that is the remontada.
All right. Then you had the incident with the pigeon. Yeah.
We also had the Neymar injury the last two seasons.
Right.
We had that incredible game against United. And we also had the game against City in 2016 where Laurent Blanc thought he was Pep Guardiola and starting doing some
crappy tactics. So you guys are due for a break, aren't you?
No, I just think it's in our DNA. That's the thing.
You mentioned karma before.
Yeah, but this is a bad one. And I think there's a curse there somewhere. And I don't think Wednesday is going to change that.
You were suggesting it was like Qatar karma or something.
Well, I don't know if it's Qatar karma, but it's the fact that since they took over, there's always something dramatic happening on those Champions League nights. And the fact is that whether it's from our own making or the opposition or the referee or anything, it's just not happening for some reason, which is quite incredible.
You cannot undermine the draw as well. PSG has been tremendously unlucky every single year with the draw. That's true.
Even when
United,
United.
Well, United is... Yeah, you're right. United was easy last year. Was supposed to be.
But
the rest of the opponents, man.
Even City in 2016, they were not good. That was not a very good team.
You beat Chelsea the round before.
Yeah. And then Laurent Blanc, like I said, really thought he was a good manager.
Hasn't worked since.
I've said it a lot of recent weeks, but what a club to support. It's pretty remarkable.
James, what do you think? Who's going through?
I think PSG will go through.
Oh, I love you.
Just to jinx it.
I love you. Shut up.
Yeah, but wait till you hear what happens in the quarters.
I'm sure.
That same night, European champions have a do-or-die clash with Atletico, who are 1-0 up from the game at the Wanda Metropolitano. You will recall that it was an early goal, wasn't it, from Saul after Liverpool's back line went to sleep a little bit, which they've been doing rather a lot of late, not looking as focused or intense. Alvaro, here's a question from Kenny Gavin, who says, does Diego Simeone have anything special planned for the Liverpool game? I watched Atleti against Seville on Saturday and I'm buoyed with cautious optimism that Liverpool will progress.
Anything special, I don't know. Four holding midfielders, probably. That would be the answer, I guess, to try to keep the scoreline as it is. But I believe that we are going to see a very similar pattern to what we saw in the Wanda Metropolitano, with Liverpool pretty much playing at Atletico de Madrid's half all the time. And I believe it's inevitable that Liverpool, if they are placed there, they are going to have big chances at some point. In fact, they did at the Wanda Metropolitano. Mohamed Salah had one. Henderson, I believe that he had another one. And I think that Atletico de Madrid, they did the perfect game against Liverpool, but that hasn't been the trend this season. In fact, since they played against Liverpool, they have conceded 4 goals in 3 games.
They've also been scoring a lot more as well, haven't they?
Yeah, that's true, because I think that they have had a little bit more confidence after, and they are more pumped after what happened against Liverpool. Joao Felix is back, and against Sevilla, he played a really good first half. I mean, he touched the ball very few times, but every time he had the ball on his feet, he did something special. Álvaro Morata scored the penalty, and Diego Costa is back as well. But the thing is, I would like to say something about Diego Costa here. He has had a quite complicated surgery. He had basically surgery on the cervical disc herniation. He's got a metal plaque in his back.
In his spine?
Yeah, in his spine, yes. And basically, he's not confident going for the headers. Last week, there are reports that Atletico de Madrid were doing some training drills in which heading the ball was basically the 90% of it, and Diego Costa decided to withdraw from it because he was scared to head the ball.
Right.
So if you want to play against Liverpool, and Diego Costa, I believe that he will play some minutes against Liverpool, and you're going to play against Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk, you want a fully confident striker. So maybe the Diego Costa that we know or we knew from the past, will no longer be as ferocious because, again, he seems to be a little bit weakened after that surgery.
Okay.
But the thing is, if you're Simeone and you watch that Bournemouth game, and even the Chelsea game, and you there's a lot of weaknesses in those two games, the thing that you could try to reproduce, like pressing Fabinho, for example, who is clearly not back to his best. And maybe Simone will go like, you know what? Maybe we should play a bit higher on the pitch than the low block that everybody expects them to play in, and maybe go and put them under pressure a little bit instead of just waiting for them to create anything and then kick the ball every time they have it.
The absence of Alisson, a major concern.
Yeah, of course.
It's a big absence. And Atletico de Madrid, in all fairness, they are in a better condition, at least when it comes to numbers, than they were 3 weeks ago. Because I remember that the likes of Trippier, Joao Felix, and some other key players weren't there in the first leg. And right now, Atletico de Madrid has the full squad available. I don't know if Thomas Lemar is going to be ready, but anyway, with Joao Felix being back, I don't think that he was going to play.
Not sure that's a big loss.
Yeah, exactly. And well, actually, I cannot recall anything that Thomas Lemar has done well during his stint at Atletico de Madrid.
Okay. He's earning a lot of money, trust me. He's done that well.
That's the thing he's doing best. But with Joao Felix back, I think that Atletico de Madrid has the possibility of counter-attacking better.
How key is Henderson's return to fitness for Liverpool?
Who?
Jordan Henderson,
Oh, the player of the year.
Give it up.
Player of the year, because he missed four games and now people...
Yeah, what happened in those four games, Jules?
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen. Last time Liverpool were in the situation with the deficit to recover from an away trip to Spain. Of course, they did so in magnificent fashion in last year's competition against Barcelona on the way to the final. I'm sure a lot of Liverpool fans are thinking back, comforting themselves with that memory. But I'm also thinking about their last Champions League match at Anfield when they only managed to draw with a less than irresistible Napoli, 1-1, no, in game week 5 of the group stages this year. Draw this time around.
It's not enough. No good
for them. They've
been a little bit off in the Champions League.
Yeah, they have been.
Maybe it's inevitable after winning it and after concentrating on the league that you somehow lose some kind of sharpness. Now, though, I think that it might tilt again if they stay in the competition, of course.
All right. Are they going to stay in the competition?
Sooner. But logic says that Atletico Madrid should be out. I mean, they are 13 or 14 points off the pace in a very average Spanish league. And Liverpool, they are breaking every record.
They are, Alvaro. Just whether that record-breaking form has deserted them at a delicate moment. Who's going through, James?
I think Atletico will go through.
No way.
Liverpool. Jules?
Liverpool. Even if Henderson is a miss. I was kidding. But they will go through. They will put this one right.
I think Liverpool will do it.
Yeah.
Right. And Alvaro?
I say that. Liverpool.
Okay.
James the contrarian.
James, I mean, no, like...
Very good. Two more Champions League games coming up in the midweek action. That's on Tuesday. Leipzig, Spurs and Valencia, Atalanta. We'll turn our thoughts to those next.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's new racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. Tune in for analysis, interviews and a bit of crack. Ruby is the expert, Tom holds it together, and Paddy, well, Paddy's funding the whole thing, so he insisted that he gets to be involved. The first episode is available to download now. On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Alrighty, Tuesday's action sees Spurs visiting Leipzig. Spurs goes 1-0 down after Timo Werner's penalty at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Also Tuesday night in Spain, Valencia trying for a comeback against Atalanta. They're behind closed doors at the Mestalla. Atalanta 4-1 up from the first leg. Prospect, Salvador? Not good,
No, I think that the game can be very entertaining. Okay. Yes, because Atalanta-Valencia should have ended with a higher scoreline, even more than a 4-1. I was very puzzled with how easily Valencia created chances against Atalanta at San Siro. Vaz, who is a very average crossmaker, he was putting the ball in the box and short strikers were able to volley the ball, to head the ball. So I believe that if Valencia has the belief and if they try to be next to the Atalanta's box, they will create chances. All that said, obviously, Atalanta is the favorite because they've got, number one, a more defined style. Valencia, I think that they are still finding themselves a little bit. And because Atalanta, they've got more dangerous players up front. That's a fact. I mean, this season, Valencia, they don't have any striker that you are saying, this guy is breaking every record, or at least he's a match-winning guy. Rodrigo, who will be back, fortunately for Valencia, has been doubtful until the last minute. Kevin Gameiro is not performing well. Maxi Gomez is out with an injury. So I believe that Atalanta, in the chances that they will certainly have, because Valencia will have plenty of distance between their defenders and their goalkeepers, Atalanta has better strikers.
Atalanta, who didn't play this weekend because they'd already fulfilled their fixture from the round the previous weekend. And what a fulfilling result it was. A 7-2 victory over Lecce in the most recent performance. You're quietly confident here, James.
Quietly confident, although you'll remember, James, that the last Italian team to take this kind of advantage to Spain...
Was it Inter?
No. No, it was Milan against Deportivo La Coruña.
Oh, that was a 4-1. Oh, my goodness.
Beautiful night.
Oh, my goodness.
So psychologically, how you manage these nights, and we see it in the Champions League all the time, well, certainly in the last few years, teams who look home and hosed in the first leg, PSG, then throwing it away in the second leg. I'd still be surprised because, as Alvaro has mentioned, it's not just the problems that Valencia have scoring goals, it's that centre-back partnership as well, which was tried and untested going into the game at San Siro with Mangala and Diakabi.
In fact, Coquelin may be a centre-back against Atalanta, and he doesn't have, obviously, any knowledge about how to play in that position, I believe.
I also think Atalanta will be better defensively in this game than they were in the reverse fixture.
They did a lot of chances.
They did, but I think part of that was they lost their centre-back in the warm-up, one of them, and the guy who came in hadn't really played for the last 2 years, Mattia Caldara. I think to some extent that has a little bit of an impact. But this is a team that scores so many goals. You mentioned the 7-2 win against Lecce. It was the third time they've scored seven goals in a game this season. So I'd be confident of them getting an away goal.
I see. All right. Meantime, Tuesday, Leipzig hosting Spurs. Leipzig, who lost second spot in the Bundesliga this weekend after their second straight draw. This one was goalless at Wolfsburg with Timo Werner on the bench, at least to begin with.
Yeah, he came on, but he failed to make a telling intervention. Leipzig for the second week running were a little bit anemic, a little bit devoid of a spark.
Do you think their focus has been on the Champions League?
I don't know. I think Julian Nagelsmann is puzzled as much as anyone else, saying that in a footballing sense, it didn't quite click for us. They had enough possession. They had a very decent team out. They don't have many huge problems up front when it comes to injured players. So it's very difficult to explain. I guess the bad news for Spurs is that, at home, should be a different Leipzig side. And also, we haven't seen too many performances this season from Leipzig where they just don't happen up front. There's been a few, but then they've always come back and looked very, very good. And the goals tally still speaks for itself. So it should be very difficult for Spurs to come back, especially if they go there with this kind of defeatist attitude that Jose has been alluding to in recent weeks, saying we can't possibly cope with all these injuries. No manager in the history of football has ever had to deal with such a flurry of absences. And
you can't come back from a 1-0 defeat at home in the first leg. Never.
It's impossible, basically.
He's just getting, getting in Leipzig's mind.
Yeah, which would make a 2-1 win a real miracle and a masterpiece of coaching.
Is that what's going to happen, Rafa?
I don't think so. I think Leipzig will...
But it's not impossible.
No, it's not impossible. And the one thing that Spurs might have going for themselves is if the game stays 0-0 for a while, maybe that kind of psychology that James talked about might kick in, where you're thinking suddenly, oh, you know, you're afraid of losing the advantage, and then you become then you become a little bit too inhibited and don't play the game anymore. But they had similar fears about their own lack of maturity before the first leg, Leipzig. They were quite nervous. And they overcame it quite brilliantly. So I think in terms of the team's development, there are no real indications that they will lose their nerve. So I think they will try and win this game early, putting a lot of pressure on this Spurs team to basically try to kill any hopes of a resurgence. And I think with a crowd that's really up for it, and especially with the knowledge that this might be one of the last few games for the next few weeks that you can actually attend, it might be a tricky evening for Spurs.
Well, there's Europa League as well coming up on Thursday. We'll touch on some of those fixtures later on. After this, though, we're going to take a quick trip around the world. If there's one person who knows football, it's the Totally Football Show listener. Now, if only there was a way for you to harness that know-how, you know, for cash, well, that's why we've teamed up with Football Index. Football Index is a platform for buying and selling shares in the world's top players. You use all your footballing insight to build a portfolio of the players you think will rise in value, and then you win dividends when your players perform on the pitch or in the media. You can download Football Index on Android and iOS right now, and when you sign up using the code TFS20, you could win a signed shirt from the football team of your choice. Nice. That promo code again, TFS20. Search for Football Index to find out more. It's over 18s only. Full terms and conditions are at trade.footballindex.co.uk/TFS and, of course, begambleaware.org.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Global football jewels. How about, woof, that Carlos Tevez thunderstrike, which won Boca Juniors the title.
Indeed. On the last day of the season, it was between them and their biggest rival, River Plate. And River were in the lead, but they lost. And Boca and Carlos Tevez against Gimnasia and Diego Armando, which obviously prompted Carlos Tevez to give him a big kiss to say hello, no coronavirus there.
Not just any old kiss, a kiss on the lips.
And a long one as well. It was beautiful. And then Carlos Tevez, at 36 years of age, scoring the winner that gives the title to Boca. That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
So Danny De Rossi's champion as well then?
Well, I mean, he left but he's still Christmas. Yeah. I mean, he's still part of the
team. I don't
know
what the rule is.
It would be his first league title of his career, having retired, a couple of months before the season ended.
Because, you know, I think in certain leagues, you have to play a certain amount of games or be on the bench for a certain. So I don't know if he qualifies, but it would be harsh not to send him a medal through the post.
It's a fantastic story anyway, because in Argentina and in South America, everyone thought that the River Plate was going to be the big team of the country for the next 3 or 4 years. And I think that this victory of Boca is a turning point as well. And River with Gallardo is doing an excellent job, and in Copa Libertadores we saw that happening as well. Boca was still, and they are still upset about having lost the Copa Libertadores final in Madrid against River, but winning this is a little bit like finding a turning point. Riquelme now is the vice president, so there is like this component of an emotional attachment from the vice president to the players and to the club. Carlos Tevez is a player that, if you ask anyone in Buenos Aires in December, what do you think about Carlos Tevez's retirement? No one will go to his house saying, Tevez, please, don't retire. They couldn't care less. Carlos Tevez was so detached from Boca Juniors that he didn't even play that Copa Libertadores final in 2018. And now, suddenly, he has become the hero. So I believe that a new story can be written now, with Boca going back to some basics and to some legends from the past, use them as a catalyzer to start winning again.
Interesting. We shall see. Meantime, MLS proceeded with its second round of action. There was more Carlos Vela magic. Lovely free kick in Rafa. Tremendous game. You may have missed this one. LAFC in a 3-3 draw with Philly. Also, this incredible free kick from Jakob Glesnes.
He's gone for it. What on earth have we just seen?
Inter Miami lost again, although they did score a goal this time. And Thierry Henry's Montreal drew 2-2 at Dallas.
In the last minute.
Was it?
Yeah, and Ricardo Pepi, who's just turned 17, scored the goal for Dallas.
Eredivisie, Den Haag, Pardew's Den Haag. They lost 4-0 at AZ Alkmaar.
That even after the ultras had turned up at training and actually gave them a tactics lesson. more tactics, tactical instruction than they received all season.
Right. when was this?
I think this was last week. There was this photo of the ultras with like a not a chalkboard, but like a note, one of those big notepad things.
Right.
And they were, you know, sort of scribbling down.
Sort of A3 type. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, right. You know, sort
how long before he gets sacked, do you think?
I don't know. They're currently 7 points from safety.
It'd be amazing if they gave the job to the ultras.
Some said it'd be better than Pardew to be fair.
Any news of penis getting back into the box? Or?
I don't have any news
penis
on that.
Been
sorry.
Down a lot since that first
right.
game.
AZ, meanwhile, with that win, stay level with Ajax. The two teams are on the same points, but Ajax are +8 on goal difference. Ajax who were 3-1 winners at Heerenveen. In Portugal, do you remember the other day we were talking about Porto beating Benfica 3-2 and Jules, you said Porto had no chance of winning the title. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Do you know who's top now?
Of course, Porto 1 point clear. Yeah. Benfica have crumbled both in the league and in Europe as well, where they lost in the Europa League last week.
Mm.
But yeah, it's quite frightening for a team that hadn't lost until that defeat against Porto. Then since then, it's incredible.
Yeah, all it takes one defeat. Mind you, you're not the only one eating your words, Jules. There's also Bedouin Dia. In the Turkish Super League.
The former Stoke City midfielder, for the ones who remember him, who now plays for Trabzonspor, who got instruction from the coach, you know, as a few coaches do now,
a piece
of paper passed on to him. So he read it, and then, for no one to ever find out what was written on the paper, he ate it.
Secret agent style.
It's
that's
amazing.
So cool. But did he kind of chew it up and then spit it out, or did he actually ingest?
No, it looks like he actually swallowed
it. Brilliant.
That is proper. I mean, you can rely on people like him.
But what kind of information was on that piece of paper?
We will never know.
But as you said, he's forgotten as well now. It's like, you know.
No, it's the ultimate professional.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Wow. Oh, Greece. Alvaro, the other day you were telling us about the plight of PAOK. In the Greek Super League. What's happened since then?
They got 7 points deduction, which you would say, well, that's a tremendous punishment. Well, it's not that much because the regular season is over.
Mm-hmm.
PAOK was going to be second. With the deduction, it's still second.
Okay.
And now the playoffs start. So they are still set to try to win the league.
Okay. I've got some penis information for you, Rafa.
Yes, put it in my ear.
Penis was out. Pardew had his penis out this weekend.
Right.
Yeah, he was suspended. Meantime, in other leagues that you might be curious about, let's go with the Derby d'Italia after this.
Per Maturini dal fondo, il cross che parte in mezzo. Attenzione, Ronaldo, il tiro in rete! Ha segnato la Juventus esattamente al minuto 9 nel corso del secondo tempo. Cambia il parziale all'Allianz Aaron Ramsey.
Yep, that's the sound of Juve 2 Inter 0 in a very empty stadium. The deadlock broken, James, by one Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, Ramsey, who'd end the game with a goal and assist. I think
took the ball off Cristiano Ronaldo as well.
Yes, as he did in that game against Lokomotiv Moscow, when Ronaldo thought he'd got a free kick goal and Ramsey ended up just prodding it home just to make sure. But impressive display from him and Bentancur in midfield. The goal came at a good time for Juventus because they were starting to come under some real pressure from Inter. And as soon as they got in front, Inter lost their way a bit, really. And it was interesting seeing how Conte reacted to going behind. He changed the system, which is something that we've seen quite frequently since the January transfer window. They went from 3-5-2 to 4-3-1-2. Eriksen came on first in the 3-5-2, then in the 4-3-1-2. He didn't look like he knew where he was. Didn't really help them change the game back in their favour. And how did Sarri reply to that? He put on Paulo Dybala, and Dybala scored.
Dybala destroyed Ashley Young, poor thing. Twice.
Yeah, I think Ashley's still looking for Dybala, who did him twice. Yeah, yeah. And Romario-esque goal, I think, from Dybala.
About Aaron Ramsey, who was using a slightly different position. Sarri's comments after the game that I think I've almost found my Juve now. I'm wondering if so, is that going to be what he's going to do? It's kind of Ramsey, Bentancur, and who's
that? I think the other player who played well last night in midfield was Matuidi.
Right.
I thought he was very good. The midfield as a whole, which has been criticised a lot this season for not being adapted to how Sarri wants his teams to play, I think was one of the real kind of positives in the Derby d'Italia. And Juventus have tended to reserve their best performances for this fixture so far this season under Maurizio Sarri. It was true in the reverse fixture. It was true again the other night. And yeah, Bonucci and De Ligt played very well as well. And I think it does raise questions about Conte's Inter, in that we've seen certainly of late teams try and cut the supply line off to Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku, and then they become very one-dimensional. They don't really seem to have anything else in contingency to try and alternate their game plan, which I think is why we've seen Inter try to do different things, but they're so far unable really to get much going. To sort of refound this spark that they had going into the winter break.
Right, they are now 9 points behind Juve with a game in hand. Ronaldo's scoring streak ending with this. He'd found the net in 11 straight games. He was in high spirits anyway, celebrating with Ramsey the opening goal. And also when they got off the coach and there were no fans there to greet them, he did a little playful air high fives and all the imaginary fans as he walked down the entrance towards the changing rooms. Juve, top of the table, a point clear of Lazio. Milan, who you mentioned at the start, firing. Zvonimir Boban, club legend Zorro, fired midweek. And the club then following that up with a defeat to relegation strugglers Genoa.
Yeah, at San Siro as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been a tough week at Casa Milan. You've obviously seen on Saturday Lombardy being quarantined. So, a state of emergency within the city of itself. You look at what's happened to the club in the last few weeks. Ivan Gazidis gave an interview in Gazzetta dello Sport feeling, I think he needed to, because all of these rumours were coming out about Ralf Rangnick and there being a split in the club about the direction to take next season. He said, we're all on the same page, united front. And then Zvone, without authorization of the club, appeared in the same paper a week later saying, actually, we're not on the same page. You've gone behind our backs.
First time he's kicked off a civil war, of course.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he's gone. Maldini's position?
Well, Maldini's very close to Boban, and he has also expressed his dissent at this idea that Milan will be coached by Ralf Rangnick in next season. He said he doesn't think that Rangnick is the right profile for Milan. And so, from what I can gather, you know, Paolo's, I mean, not just respected as a legend that he was as a player, but in terms of how he's grown and developed as a director over the last 18 months. And that point of view will be taken into consideration. But it's clear that Elliot and Milan want to pivot in a completely different direction to how the club has been run,
which is not necessarily a bad thing when you look at their track record.
Who's right and who's wrong? Is Boban a bit of order not to understand what they're trying to do, or is what they're trying to do that is wrong and Boban is right in the sense that
I think for the players at Milan who are now directors, and this is true also, we should go back to Leonardo, who was sporting director last year and walked away, and it's also true of Gattuso, who resigned and left a lot of money on the table. For players who played under Berlusconi or in the Berlusconi era, that shift of mentality away from we are Milan, let's go out and get the best in the world, is not necessarily compatible or realistic in what Milan is in 2020, which is a team that is banned from Europe, is a team that has financial fair play restrictions. They can only spend what they earn. They don't have a stadium that they own. So they have to get smarter about how they go about recruiting and assembling a team. And everyone has to be on the same page. And I think that's one of the things that, Boban is a very smart guy. He's a very smart guy. But I think whilst he can understand this pivot, accepting it or being fully on board with it is another thing.
Mm. Great win for Genoa, though, who are struggling to get out of the bottom three.
Three wins in four.
Yeah, under Davide Nicola, who's going to be doing another bike ride at this rate.
Yes.
He was the man.
Although it won't be as far, because he's from Turin. Mm. And when he performed the greatest of great escapes with Crotone, he cycled, the length of Italy, really, to get back home, whereas Genoa's not too far away from Turin. Guardado, se la pone solo Tello, mano a mano, chuta Tello, gol, 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 del Betis.
Benzema, Benzema,
De Tello, error monumental.
Alvaro, last week the Clásico put Real Madrid on top of the league. How long did that last?
Not much, seven days. Than 7 days. Well, in fact, six, because Barcelona won on Saturday,
yep.
And then Real Madrid couldn't couldn't get the 3 points at Benito Villamarín. It was a beautiful game, particularly because no midfielders were able to defend. And then it became a really entertaining game between Betis and Real Madrid. Before anything, I have to put a word on Nabil Fekir.
Okay. Yes.
He's a blessing for a team like Betis.
Little Fekir.
Jules is busy eating a tangerine, but he just took a little break from his segments there.
Nabil Fekir
yes.
just turns up when he fancies, like, you know, turning yeah. up.
Right. Or when reminds me of somebody else.
Yeah. yeah.
Or when the game is at 9 p.m. Nabil Fekir plays very well those Sunday
oh, really?
Evening games. Yeah.
Right. The 9 p.m. slot. He forced a magnificent save from Thibaut Courtois, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yes, cool. But generally speaking, it was how clever and quick and tricky he was. And Eder Militao had a terrible time with having to mark Nabil Fekir because Eder Militao is not a right back and Nabil Fekir did whatever he wanted with him.
Wow. Thibaut Courtois, by the way, has now picked up a groin injury and is in doubt for Real Madrid's clash with Man City.
Yes, and let's see if he recovers for that game. I think that there is still a chance that he will play against Manchester City. But I think that the worst outcome from Sunday's game was what happened with Real Madrid. They totally collapsed. Right. A team that fights so much to regain the leadership in La Liga cannot go to Benito Villamarín and offer that image. They were just outmuscled by Betis. They didn't have the right attitude to play that game. And even Zinedine Zidane, after the game, he said that that was the worst performance of Real Madrid in this season. So, right. And Real Madrid hasn't been particularly good.
Whoops, Betis, as you, know, yes. you might say. Barcelona, 2 points clear now of them. Underwhelming in their own game, a 1-0 win over Real Sociedad. Leo Messi converting the penalty to earn the 3 points. Speaking of Real Sociedad, how should you say it, rather?
Sociedad.
The All Basque Copa final. Wow, how exciting is this?
For me, it's really exciting.
And for the Basque region.
For the Basque region in general, yes, it's unbelievable. It's the first time that happens in history. And
is it? Because I heard it was the first time in 93 years since Real Union yeah. faced Arenas de Getxo.
Yeah, that's why. This is the first Athletic de Bilbao Real Sociedad
the
final.
Time. These two teams.
Yeah,
okay,
these
right.
two teams, yeah. And Athletic de Bilbao has won this competition 23 times.
What?
So in the past,
wow.
they were called the King of the Cup.
Right.
Yeah.
The King of the King Cup.
Barcelona overtook Athletic de Bilbao in the last decade when it comes to cup titles. And the game is going to be played on the 18th of April in Sevilla, a neutral venue.
Are you going to go along?
I will see if I can go. Number one, we have to see if the game is going to be played behind closed doors
right.
or not, because the Spanish FA hasn't said anything about it. I will do my best to be there, obviously.
Okay.
Even though the tickets are limited, there are 22,000 for every club and then 11,000 for the Spanish FA. So in total, it will be 55,000.
Right.
And Athletic de Bilbao has like 35,000 season ticket holders and Real Sociedad as well. So it's going to be really difficult to get a ticket for that game.
Alvaro, as an Athletic fan, what do you think of when you think of Real Sociedad?
You know, there is a very nice rivalry between these two clubs. I mean, I don't dislike Real Sociedad, even though many people from Bilbao dislike Real Sociedad. And the relationship between the clubs was quite bitter in the late 90s when Athletic de Bilbao signed Echeverría from Real Sociedad at the age of 17. Maybe you remember this guy. He
yes.
played for the Spanish national team about 50 games. So the relationship between the clubs is good. The supporting groups of Athletic de Bilbao and Real Sociedad, they've got, I would say, that a really, really calm, nice relationship.
What does someone from Bilbao think of someone from San Sebastian?
Yeah. Come on, be honest.
I think that Real Sociedad is it's a club that I want them to be in the top flight because normally I love the Basque Derby, obviously. And I think that they are just soft. Athletic Bilbao is stronger.
Here we go.
Historically, Real Sociedad is always a bit softer. Athletic de Bilbao.
No, that's what you mean.
I say soft. Yeah. But I believe that the final is going to be really beautiful. There will be this silly controversy again about booing the Spanish anthem before the game,
right.
because the crowd is going to be Basque. And put together two cities that between them both, they have sent to the Spanish national teams more players than any other provinces in Spain, Bilbao and San Sebastián. Mm-hmm. Those two areas produce plenty of footballers, and I find it quite unbelievable that in 80 years of Spanish football history, they haven't played the final against each other in the Spanish Cup.
Right, this time around, they're going to be basking in glory. Jules, you just found a video for us that you're very excited about.
No, I'm not.
He was looking for that for ages.
He certainly was. What happens? It's relating to Portuguese football.
Yeah, it's only in the Sporting City Aves game on at the weekend. Uh-huh. Wendel, the Sporting midfielder,
right,
during the game had like a challenge from an opposition player, and his short was pulled with his boxer short underneath.
What? Everything?
Yeah. He revealed the
tackle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was pretty impressive. That's all.
Okay.
Talking about penis, Den Haag.
Yeah.
We saw a real one this weekend on the football pitch. And yeah, good on Wendell.
In Germany, Rafa. Hey, Schalke took on Hoffenheim. Were there any more protests?
There were protests, but they weren't of the insulting variety. So there was very little anti-Hop stuff. Mm. The Dortmund fans actually did sing their little ditty with Hop and his mother and all this kind of stuff, but it was not a graphic presentation. There were no banners as such, and the banners that were held up were critiquing the German FA, were critiquing some of the reactions to the ultra protests, making some very salient points about double standards when it comes to Qatar and values, and even making a political point that by an ultras fan saying, well, who do we have to insult for the EU border policy to be debated? Making two points at one, really. One is the refugee crisis in Greece and Turkey, but the other one is that the fact that the game against Hoffenheim was interrupted actually brought a lot of attention. Now they've used this attention in a sort of more creative and more acceptable fashion, but there's also a danger that people would just say, well, as long as the game isn't really influenced, you know, who cares really what kind of flags and banners they're holding up? It's easier to dismiss as a protest because it doesn't really interfere with the game as such. So I think this is not quite over yet.
Okay. Is the German title race over now? You've got Bayern Munich 4 points clear, Rafa.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be over for Leipzig. They stumbled again. We talked about it earlier. Gladbach lost as well. I don't think they were ever realistic challengers. Leverkusen might be. They're very, very strong. I think it's now 8-10 for them as far as wins is concerned. And Peter Bosch pulling their act together, and also Kai Havertz really returning to his very best. He was majestic again, both in Europe and domestically. But Dortmund, I think, feel that with the, well, potentially, with the game at home being in early April, that if they keep it to 4 points, they have a good chance. The question is, what will happen in early April? Will the game go ahead? Will there be a crowd? It might not be a big advantage after all. So they look like the only team at the moment who can really keep pace with Bayern, a Bayern team that kind of went through the motions and didn't really do a lot against Augsburg and were very nearly punished, but in the end kind of just had enough.
2-0 the win. Lovely opening goal, Boateng over the top to Thomas Müller.
Yeah, and the second was the substitute, Leon Goretzka, who's very unhappy about being a substitute these days. But Thomas Müller is in great form, and Coutinho is doing just enough, well enough to stay in the side. So Goretzka has to make do with some bit parts. But Bayern, even when they're bad, are now winning games, which is the big difference to the time under Niko Kovac, when they were bad, they were losing games.
What did you make of their kit, Bayern's kit? It was a special 120th anniversary outing thing.
Yeah, it's not bad. I like the colours. It's kind of this Bordeaux.
It's like a white T-shirt with kind of Bordeaux sleeves.
Yeah, and this is how the first Bayern Munich team played.
Hmm.
But they also did this Adidas thing where they basically mute the logos and make them white on white or black on black. And I'm not quite sure it really works this effectively for this shirt. But yeah, it's okay.
Okay. After this, France.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Big game at the Velodrome Friday, Jules, featuring four goals, AVB having a meltdown, and a player in a swimming cap.
Indeed, yeah. Pippa Benedetto, who had a curtain in the back of his head, which James Horncastle was really laughing at on Friday night, what? Sending us photos. A cut in his... And I don't know why. I mean, no one knows really why. You know, but usually they put bandage and then you've got... you've never seen a swimming hat on a football pitch, right?
No.
So, but Marseille...
I loved it.
Very innovative, right. Yeah. Not that
well,
he made...
The Croatian fans sometimes wear them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, helmets,
that's
true. Yeah.
But that's a proper,
blue one. Yeah,
yeah, the blue ones, which made it look pretty cool. But
anyway, Marseille were doing. They were 2-0 up in the 85th minute, all sorted, and then they took a dive.
Exactly.
And then Jordan Amabi gave away a penalty,
which AVB was not happy with,
right?
At all.
And then a whole bunch of time added on. Gets allowed. What, 5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes.
And we're into the last of that.
Literally the last kick of the game. And Amiens, who had been in dreadful form, fighting against relegation, leveled the score to 2-2. And then AVB goes mad, goes onto the pitch.
Right. Now, I mean, to be fair to Andre, the goal scorer, Saman Ghoddos, the Iranian, he basically fouled. There's a clash with one of the Marseille players down the other end.
The way they recover the ball, there's a bit of, it could have been given as a foul. And then on the counter attack, four passes, Marseille should have never conceded that goal anyway. Mm. But AVB is right. It could have been easily cancelled through VAR for that initial foul.
And then he gets a red.
He gets a red, he goes mad, confronts the referee, accuses him to have not given a penalty in the reverse fixture a few months ago. And then he gets one yellow and then a second yellow. And then even after the game on French television, he was still arguing. But look, I was right. I did this. We don't know exactly what he said. And his ban will depend a lot on exactly the words he used against the referee. And that would be in the referee's report. He's frustrated because the team is not as efficient as he used to in the first half of the season. They've only beat Toulouse at home in 2020, which pretty much even the Totally Football Show would beat Toulouse right now. That's what they do. They lose games. And it's just not good enough for Marseille. And now behind them, Lille and Rennes are coming back, 6 points, 7 points. And they have to be very careful.
Elsewhere, no PSG, but they know now that they're going to be facing Claude Puel's Saint-Étienne in the French Cup final.
Yes, first final for Saint-Étienne in 38 years. A bit like Bilbao and... They used to be the club with the most wins in the cup when they were very good. And the last final was 1982 against PSG. And they lost at the Parc des Princes against PSG on penalties, which was PSG's first French Cup win. And then since then, PSG have gone on to win many more than Saint-Etienne. So it would be big for them and all their fans. If the game...
If
it's not behind closed door. But it would be really harsh on the very amazing... Saint-Etienne fans who then couldn't travel to Paris for the game.
Absolutely. Next weekend, PSG are due to be facing Nice, Patrick Vieira's Nice, who had a come-from-behind win against Monaco in the, what should be, the Riviera Derby.
Riviera Derby. And they played really well in the second half. Kasper Dolberg scored two goals. He's up to 11 now for the season, five in the
Is
last...
that ever since he got his watch back?
Yes, he's... That incredible incident.
That was a sad story.
That was such a sad story. And... he, again, was interviewed after the game, didn't look that chuffed, but I don't think he's one that expresses many feelings. But two very good finishes, especially the second one with the outside of his left foot, one touch. It was pretty impressive. And for Monaco, it's going to be hard now to finish in the top three and qualify for Champions League next season.
What is the perception about Robert Moreno?
He's done some really good things and you could see what the team is trying to do and the kind of football he wants to play. He's still very young and... Mm-hmm. He's very interesting when he speaks in his press conference and his interviews for someone who comes out of nowhere, really, you know, who's never a football player, like a professional football player. It's an incredible story. And I think he will be good there when he has the whole preseason to work with. He can do the transfers and everything. He just arrived at a time where it was quite challenging for Monaco.
Thanks, Jules. Still to come, we're going to have a quick think about some of the exciting clashes in the Europa League. And also, somebody wake up Rafa. It's time to answer your Twitter questions. First, it's Paddy Power.
Merci, Jimbo, and bonjour, Lee Price from Paddy Power, and indeed you two listeners. Lee, let's please start with PSG versus Dortmund in the Champions League on Wednesday night. Is it going to happen? Can the Parisians finally do it in the knockout stages?
This one's tougher to predict than which PSG player is going to throw a sulk next. Actually, that's a terrible analogy for me yet again. It's always going to be Neymar, isn't it? But but our traders go odds on that PSG win on the night. That's 8-13, with a draw or Dortmund win, both priced at 7-2, and each of those eventualities, of course, are enough to see the Germans go through. However, despite all the evidence over recent years, we're backing the French team. It's 4-5 PSG qualify here. We're hardly saying job done, though. It's evens that Dortmund go through, meaning this one's on a real knife edge. Enjoy.
All right, sticking with Dortmund, they're up to second in the Bundesliga, but is it still Bayern's title to lose?
It makes me sad. Title races are falling left, right and centre across Europe, aren't they? And this is yet another league where our traders are close to closing the book, it seems. Bayern Munich are 1-5 to win the title. When did that happen? If you do think that Dortmund can close a four-point gap, and let's face it, it wouldn't be the biggest point swing on top of the Bundesliga this season, we offer odds of 5-1 that BBB finish top of the tree. And Leipzig, remember them? They're 8-1 to be champions.
And finally, enough of this Champions League nonsense. Let's talk about the real competition in Europe, the Europa League. Last 16 stage, who's going to be lifting that big trophy in Gdansk?
I'm glad you said the venue rather than me. No, thank you. We go for a team here with a track record in Europa League. Checks notes. Oh, Manchester United. Solskjaer's men are 7-2 favourites, narrowly ahead of Inter, who are 4-1. The Italians suddenly rather short of domestic distractions, unlike United. And there's been a lot of interest in Wolves, despite the fact they only have like 10 players or something. They're now third favourites to win the competition at 6-1. And just finally, Sevilla, synonymous with this competition, are 7-1.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops, stop. Joe Breton says, how will playing games behind closed doors affect FFP? Will UEFA legislate for a loss in matchday revenue? That's a good question.
Oh, really, this was put question to Andrea Agnelli at the FT Business Summit last football week. When he made a quite controversial comment about Atalanta and whether they should be in the Champions League or not.
What was that?
Did you not see this?
No.
Yeah. They shouldn't be there.
Shouldn't be there. Not because you have one good season, you should not be in the Champions League.
So it should be based on a coefficient or something?
He said, Atalanta, I mean, we're paraphrasing here, but they don't have a great European history. And then I look at a team like Roma, who got into the Champions League semi-final 2 years ago, and they have really helped us keep our coefficient high. And yeah, should they be left out of the competition? With all the financial repercussions would come with that. Well, that's sporting meritocracy, Andrea. Yes.
And that's what sports is about, Andrea.
He was showing much more solidarity with teams like Celtic, Porto. He was basically defending those clubs and saying that they should be in Champions League because they don't make enough domestic revenue from television.
I could see his point, which was badly articulated, as it relates to, say, Ajax, because this is the big problem that he is trying to face, which is, Ajax reached the Champions League semi-final. They win their league, they win their cup, and they have to go through qualifying to get into the group stage of the Champions League. That's wrong.
Yep.
And I think if he was to compare that with Atalanta finishing, they actually finished third, but I think he was suggesting a team that finishes fourth in one of Europe's top five leagues and automatically gets into the group stages, that's wrong. It's also what you kind of lobbied for. to protect your revenue streams. But anyway, he did address this point, James. We digressed.
Right.
He was asked about that and he said, I think it's a good idea that UEFA take into account loss of matchday revenue and ticket receipts when it comes to calculating their financial fair play.
They might go on projected revenue from
Man City then. They'd be like, oh yeah, this was 50 million that game against Real Madrid. That was 55 million.
They
even
would never do that.
No, that's true. That's
please,
true.
Come on.
Dean Poole asks, will Honigstein be updating Bring the Noise or releasing something new to cover this season? Raf, you got something new in the works?
Something new, possibly. Ooh. An update, definitely.
Oh, well, lovely.
It could be two.
It could be, yeah.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
It's a possibility.
Tony Robertson, if they cancel the leagues
I'm
or
do Klopp cookbook, Klopp business book,
gym. Klopp children's book,
no, Klopp
Clap at the gym, had to lose weight.
Tony Robertson, if they cancel the leagues and Champions League before the end of the season and we move to having the results decided by current managers playing the remaining fixtures on FIFA or preferably Pro Evo, who would win the Champions League? Tony suggests Simeone with Atletico.
Nagelsmann would win it.
Would he? Is he very good? So. Is that a fact?
Yeah, I think so. Well, he is the youngest he's probably played most.
Rob M, what has happened to Alexis Sanchez since leaving Arsenal? It appears Inter have now had enough of him too.
Not had enough of him. I think he's actually played quite well, or did at the start of the season. Then he got sent off and then got injured on international duty. I think at the moment it looks like he would be returned to sender, A, because of wages, and B, because he's just not impacting games. And that was the case the other night. And also, you know, Conte just kind of really... I mean, this was surprising. Fabio Capello made this point on TV after watching Conte's post-match interview. Conte basically called into question the character of his players when he was asked, you know, sort of, what are you missing? And he's like, well, some of the players have kind of got it, some of the players haven't. And Capello was like, well, that's a weird thing to say. Yeah, after a loss, you need to be picking your team up. I remember we lost to Milan when I was coach of Roma, and I went into the dressing room straight afterwards and I said, that convinces me we're going to win the league this year.
And what happened?
They won the league.
There you go.
But yeah, Conte not seem to inspire his players there.
Only one thing on Alexis. I don't know if he's paying the amount of games that he played in the past, but I was writing an article on Alexis Sanchez some time ago, and from August 2013 until July 2017, he played 256 games.
Wow. Yeah.
4 summers straight playing football. Confederations Cups, 3 Copa America and a World Cup.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. For a long time, he was an absolute machine. Now, barely gets a run out. Seeing them given, one for Honigstein. Is Schmidt unlucky to lose his job at Augsburg?
Not really. I mean, he's only unlucky in as far as that Augsburg's performance was very creditable. And they did restrict Bayern to a few chances and they could have nicked a result. I personally think, having heard from people at the club already like 10 days ago, that this was more as an excuse to fire him. They were going to lose against Bayern. So I think the termination was scheduled for this week. And he's not unlucky in the sense that I don't think that Augsburg have done really enough. They've been okay at times, playing some all rightish stuff. But I think Schmidt now, with consecutive teams, has not quite managed to convince people that he does more than being a great motivator and somebody who gets his team running and fighting. The footballing side of it is just a little bit lacking, I think.
Augsburg currently lying down in 14th place, 5 points above the relegation playoff position. Europa League coming up on Thursday. Alvaro, no, there isn't a goal show, I'm afraid, which means that you have to basically select which game you want to watch, unless you're going to go multi-screen on that biatch. You have 4 games kicking off at 5 to 6, and then another 4 at 8 o'clock. Which one should everybody watch? These are the 4 afternoon games. Eintracht Frankfurt, Basel, Basaksehir here, Copenhagen, Lask against Man United, and Sevilla Roma.
Got to be the Monchi Derby.
Monchi Derby, yeah. Sevilla Roma?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
All right. And then in the evening, ooh, this is tough. Inter against Getafe, that's behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. A fascinating stylistic clash. Rangers against Bayer Leverkusen.
That should actually be really good fun.
Really?
Yeah, Leverkusen, very much the form team with the majestic Kai Havertz in full pomp. Looking good. I mean, they made such light work of Porto, which was really impressive, I thought. And Rangers will have their work cut out to keep them quiet.
Rangers have got back to winning ways with a 1-0 win away at Ross County at the weekend. The other games Thursday evening are Olympiacos Wolves, which could be interesting, though.
Yeah, away in Greece as well.
Another all-Portuguese manager derby, that one.
Indeed. Indeed.
And Wolfsburg Shakhtar.
Yeah, Shakhtar who knocked out Benfica.
It's also a game.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a match taking place at 8 o'clock. Nice. Also on Thursday, Totally Football Show will return to react to whatever happens.
The Champions.
In the Champions League. So do make sure you join us for that, a listener. And then, of course, the Euro Gang will be back next Tuesday for all your continental info needs. Alvaro, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Rafa, lovely to see you. Julianne, James Horncastle, you listener. We'll see you Thursday, I hope. And for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello listeners, I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
and a Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League 2?
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League Show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy News Media.